Hey everyone, it's me, Camille.
And me, Tim.
And in this episode, we're going to be telling you a story about race, identity, art, some big ideas.
Ideas that can often be interpreted in very different ways.
Which is why we're going to introduce you to a couple we recently met. Shanti Parikh is an anthropology and African and African American studies professor at Washington University here in St. Louis.
And her husband, Jason Wilson, owns a chain of coffee shops.
High stakes, I got more estate than Philly. Shopping sprees, copping three.
Who is that?
IES is fully loaded. IES.
Is that Drake?
Jay-Z.
They've been married for a decade.
I'm not going to rap like Jason did, because I might outdo him.
Nice.
And his ego is all tied up with his ability to outdo me in rapping.
Shanti's got all her lyrics in her phone.
Rap battles aside, you get the point. The two are not afraid to challenge one another, and they did so recently in a very public forum.
Yeah, the civic-minded couple found themselves in a heated debate at a museum, of all places. Specifically, the Contemporary Art Museum here in St. Louis, which everybody calls CAM for short.
This fall, CAM showed the work of a young white artist named Kelly Walker. And his exhibit includes pictures of civil rights protesters in Birmingham being attacked by police dogs, with different shades of chocolate splashed all across it.
My first response was I was interested to know what the message behind the picture was. And I was told that wasn't his main intent. His main intent was the technique of large printing, of the manipulation of imagery. And I also heard that there was some concern about some of what he was doing. And I was willing to give it a pass at the time. I said, okay, as long as the artist come and is able to explain it. So it did seem like it immediately, even before it went up, that it would need to be packaged and presented a certain way, particularly the use of the black body in a time when violence against the black body was already such a conversation in St. Louis.
I thought it was great, and I was eager to, you know, have the community have this conversation about racism and institutional racism and breaking barriers, and you know how people perceive themselves as African Americans, and how white people perceive African Americans, and just having that dialogue about what does it look like, and how does this artwork affect your thought process. So I thought it was pretty cool. I thought it was pretty interesting.
Shanti and Jason didn't just have different ideas about the value of the art.
They also had opposite ideas about how the museum and the community should respond to the art.
Jason was of the mindset that it shouldn't come down. And I was of the mindset, you can't say that until you work the issue out. You have to sit down and have a conversation about how can we make this right.
And all their feelings, ideas, and emotions boiled over one night at, where else, the family dinner table.
So my nieces and nephews were at the table one night listening to Shanti and I talk about this. And I got kind of upset. I tend to raise my voice a little bit sometimes.
And our 6 and 8 year old were there.
Yeah, they were there. Yeah. So my 6 and 8 year old are there. And by the way, they know about everything. So they know all about racism.
That a black woman's body was large on the wall with toothpaste on it, and even they were like, "Well, what is that?"
Yeah, but they're aware of all these issues that affect our community. And Shanti and I don't guard them or shield them from any of these types of things. Because they've been faced with it at their schools where they've been called a name because of their color.
But to the question, we...
Yeah, but to the question, yeah, the point is that we discussed it and it was a heated debate because they all had a perspective.
And on today's episode, we're going to get into all these different perspectives.
Because the positions that Jason and Shanti are taking are part of a long-running debate in the art world about representation, power, and race.
We live here.
We live here.
We live here.
We live here.
A project exploring
race,
class,
power,
poverty,
systems, and the people they touch.
I'm Tim Lloyd.
And I'm Camille Stanley. And from St. Louis Public Radio, this is We Live Here.
So if you are a regular listener of this show, by now you are so exhausted by our long conversations about critical art theory, the history of the Western art canon.
Okay, guys. We're kidding.
I can keep going.
We're kidding. This is actually the first time we've tackled this issue on the show. Mm. And while Tim and I are certainly appreciate art, we're by no means experts. But we study up, and of course we have other journalist friends who are experts in this area.
Indeed we do, and joining us in studio is one of those people, Willis Ryder Arnold. He's an arts reporter here at St. Louis Public Radio. What's up, man?
Hey, how are you doing?
We're good.
Yeah.
We're good.
So you host the podcast called Cut and Paste, and if you're into art, and definitely if you're into art and in St. Louis, you should check it out at stlpublicradio.org or anywhere you get your podcasts, iTunes, those kind of places.
You guys know what to do.
Yeah.
Anyway, Willis's beat got really busy this fall when Cam put up the exhibit that Jason and Shanti were talking about.
Yeah, and the museum thought, you know, this exhibit, it's going to be a breakthrough show. But Willis, would it be fair to say that this show blew up in, like, not the best possible way?
Yeah. Let me back up and actually set the scene for you. The exhibit opened here in St. Louis last September, just after the 2-year anniversary of Michael Brown's death in Ferguson. Jason, who you guys heard from earlier, was actually pretty hyped about the potential of the exhibit to spark a dialogue about race. In fact, he's on the museum board and says the exhibit's curator, Jeffrey Uslip, was thinking the same thing.
My thought was, well, this guy, he'll be well prepared because this is not the first time he's shown this work. You know, I trust that Jeffrey's going to, you know, prepare him, you know, for what's going on. And I know he was going to do that. I know he did that. And then when I found out that he did a horrible job, then I was pissed off.
And the person who was supposed to be ready to answer questions about race and art was Kelly Walker, the young white artist we were telling you about. He's from Georgia, and his work has been shown in influential galleries from Los Angeles to Spain. His exhibit in St. Louis is called Kelly Walker Direct Drive.
Yeah, Tim and I actually went over to the museum because it's right around the corner from the office because we wanted to see this art.
Right, and it's made up of iconic pictures from Black culture and media that Walker then digitally altered. So, for example, there's this one major piece of the exhibit. It's a floor-to-ceiling print of the rapper Trina in a bikini on the cover of King magazine that's covered with digital scans of what are supposed to be toothpaste.
Yeah, it's pretty startling and, gotta say, kind of weird.
And you're not alone. Many people found it offensive. And some say the white smears actually look like semen. And they found it equally offensive that visitors could walk on the image.
Yeah, that was really weird. But again, Tim and I aren't experts. So, yep. Willis, what was the response from the rest of the art community?
Honestly, people were kind of freaked out. I caught up with local artist Khalil Irvin, who was working in his studio.
When I think about someone just putting chocolate sauce on a historical image for Black and white people in America, it shows white people that they can do whatever they want, and it shows Black people that, yeah, you don't, your struggle and the reality of civil rights in America really doesn't matter.
Irving joined a group of artists calling for a boycott of the exhibit. Three Black members of the museum's administrative staff signed a letter calling for the exhibit to come down. And as pressure mounted, the museum hastily put together a community forum about the controversy. That's when Jason and Shanti's dinner table disagreement spilled into the public. Audio from the evening isn't great, but here's Jason defending Walker's exhibit and the discussion it sparked.
I push for it. I'm going to stand by it. Let me tell you why. Because right now, these beautiful people right here, and you all are as beautiful as well, are here talking about something that you would never talk about.
But for Shanti, sparking a conversation about art and race wasn't enough to justify the exhibit.
And when I see artists who come from a community who they represented, who feel a deep hurt. Again, this isn't about offense. It's about a hurt in a post-Ferguson era where our community is suffering. I don't mean just our Black community as a Black woman who has a Black husband and 2 Black sons. I mean racially. People who came out tonight, whether you're Black, white, Latino, Asian, you're out because you care about the race of our community.
For a lot of people here, you can't extract race from Walker's exhibit. But again, Walker has his defenders, not the least of which is the exhibit's curator, Jeffrey Uslip.
He is the one contemporary artist of our generation that is thinking through history, race, identity, and their lasting, evolving, and rotating implications. Kelly is not telling us what to think one way or another. What he is doing is allowing his practice to help us think through the issues of our time.
But here's where critics of the exhibit saw a disconnect, because Walker himself says his work really isn't about race.
The race issue? I think I deal with the body more so than race, and the body both being the mechanical or the machine, like the computer or the record player, as well as the body being an organic, material-based being.
And after his art went up, he left town. Meanwhile, the controversy was starting to seep beyond city borders. Local artists posted essays on prominent art blogs that criticized Walker and his work. On top of that, the influential website Art News also started reporting on the controversy.
You know, Willis, I kind of remember this time because it seemed like CAM officials went into damage control mode. You know, Tim and I go over there often, and we started seeing these temporary barriers around the work.
Exactly, and Walker himself even issued a statement.
Yeah, and I have a copy of it here, and I'll read you a little portion of it. It reads, quote, "Given the painful recent history of the city, as well as the much longer history of violence and injustice directed at its African-American community, I should have been better prepared to address the subject matter," end quote.
But the exhibit stayed up, and Shanti says the museum scrambling to answer critics didn't go far enough.
It seemed to me at that moment that the Contemporary Art Museum needed to seize the opportunity to do something radical. It needed to be able to use that not just as an opportunity for talk, because there's a lot of talk about race going on, but make some sort of proposition or do something that would be a little bit more transformative. The decision to not take it down that was articulated at that moment, I thought was an additional abuse. I thought it was further showing that the community that was calling for change did not have any power.
People like Shanti have been pushing for the art world to become more inclusive for a long, long time. For decades, there have been calls for museums and galleries to hire more non-white curators and administrators, and to show more work from African-American artists and others excluded from mostly white institutions. It's a world portrait artist Kehinde Wiley has been navigating for years.
Well, the Kelly Walker work was part of a feed in my Facebook page. And so I was curious and I clicked. And I saw that a number of people were upset about the audacity of a young white American male to make these kind of sweeping statements about his community and the people and their histories in a way that seemed very privileged.
And if you're not part of the art world, you may not know this, but Wiley's a really big deal. He's been compared to Andy Warhol, Norman Rockwell, and Jeff Koons. Some of Wiley's most famous work depicts young people of color, painted in heroic poses in the tradition of European portraiture. He's painted young black women as saints and young black men as generals.
The goal ultimately is to have them go through art history books, to look at some of the grand celebrated paintings of the past, to imagine how they might imagine themselves being portrayed in a painting.
Wiley does this deliberately, because white elites still control most art museums and galleries.
All right, guys, Tim and I are going to jump in here.
Because we need to explain just how white the art establishment is, and how that contributed to, shall we say, cringe-worthy moments throughout history.
Exactly. So let's start with some numbers. A 2015 survey from the Mellon Foundation found that only 4% of museum leadership in America is black, and 3% is Latino.
Demographics aside, the art world has tried to deal with issues of race in the past, but a lot of the time, art institutions like CAM here in St. Louis have stumbled along the way. Let's walk through some examples.
In 1969, the Metropolitan Museum of Art launched Harlem on My Mind, which got criticized because it left out input from black artists.
20 years later, in the mid-80s, the Museum of Modern Arts in New York was criticized for its primitivism exhibit, which featured white artists influenced by African art traditions.
Critics said the name itself demeaned black people and their traditions. Then in 1993, the Whitney Biennial, one of the top art shows in New York, deliberately included works of artists from various ethnicities and races.
But at the time, white art critics called the work violent and overly political. However, we should say that art critics these days say that initial response was way off base.
Instead, they say the problem is that critics at the time, mostly straight white men, couldn't look past their own biases.
Which brings us back to Wiley and his experience as a black artist. Willis picks the story back up from here.
At the time Wiley came on the art scene in the early 2000s, things had changed, sort of. There'd been a string of black artists who'd broken through and diversified what's considered to be the establishment of the art world.
And we're talking about artists like Kerry James Marshall, Glenn Ligon, Kara Walker. I stand on the shoulders of those visionaries who were able to make these space-clearing gestures and allowed for newer voices to come through.
And although his work was accepted quickly, that doesn't mean it was always understood.
What I ended up with, from a critical perspective, was many people who just simply didn't do their homework. They didn't know who the models were. They didn't know how I found them. All they said was that Kehinde Wiley paints rappers. And it was fascinating to me that young, black, male, urban, visible, in a respected domain equates to rapper. Now, today, we're all sort of working within this slightly more fertilized space, but there's a lot more to do and a lot more to learn.
And we've got a lot more to get into on this show.
Yeah, like lessons some people are taking away from the controversy here in St. Louis.
And the efforts by young people of color to challenge the art establishment.
And will anything be changing at CAM after all of this controversy?
Yeah, stick around.
So just before the break, we established that there have been some improvements in the art world. There's still a lot to do.
With that in mind, we're handing the story back over to Willis.
And just like the first part of this show, we're going to start at the dinner table with Shanti and Jason. If you remember, their argument about Walker's work happened in front of their young kids as well as their niece and nephew, who are in their 20s.
So I think for me, it was with that conversation, they realized that that representations, now we're talking about art, that representations matter, and that representations can never be decontextualized and always carry a meaning, whether it's an implicit meaning or it's an explicit meaning.
Shanti and Jason say it's important to acknowledge that any precedents set in the art world now will be dealt with by future generations, that the art we display today will affect how young people see the world tomorrow. Young people, like Taylor Aldridge. She's a black art critic living in Detroit.
Hello?
I got a hold of her on Skype while she was out running errands one morning.
I have a guest, actually a friend of mine who's an artist, Tiana McLaughlin. She's visiting the city. So I'm like getting bedding and groceries right now to properly host her.
Taylor formed the website arts.black last year with her friend Jessica Lynn because they didn't see enough people of color or other marginalized communities represented in art criticism.
And so I posed the question on Facebook, where are all the black arts critics? We kind of, Jess and I, came to this aha moment, like, well, what if we sort of called together a place for this work to exist and where people can feel comfortable to really, really write critically.
Taylor says sites like hers exist to call out bias that can be hard to untangle from traditionally white institutions. And this really applies to the Walker exhibit at CAM. Most of the museum's leadership is white. There's only one black person on its governing board. That would be Jason. And the curator in charge of the exhibit was white. The artist, white.
If it were not for another artist or writer who is sort of providing an alternative narrative, a counter narrative to what the museum institution may be providing, then, I mean, we would just be grappling with a whole nother scenario and not really understanding the implications of what's happening between the communities of St. Louis and this larger institution.
And the relationship between community, art, and an institution often hinges on what an artist is trying to say. In fact, Kehinde Wiley, the famous painter, says when there isn't clarity behind an artist's intent, especially when the images can be sensitive, this relationship becomes strained. And often what an artist is trying to say will be tied to the color of his or her skin. It's something he's learned firsthand. Early on in his career, Wiley did a series painting figures of white women, and people couldn't get over it.
There was a fascination with this young black man who was fetishizing the white female body, and there was an excitement around that.
He was even pushed to make that a focus of his work.
A new investigation into white femininity seen from a black male perspective. That simply wasn't my project. My project was to learn the mechanics of painting.
So he took the history of those techniques and flipped them. Like we told you earlier, he applied them to subjects previously excluded from that space on the wall. Brazilians, Israeli people of color, and others from around the world. Just people on the street that he painted to push portraiture past that false binary of black and white art.
I, however, belong to a world and a set of priorities and a personal history that demands that I say something in the affirmative, that demands that I celebrate the values that I have as an American, as a black man, as a queer son of a Nigerian father and Texan mother. All of these personal histories give rise to what you end up doing. And the reason why I do what I do is because I have no other choice. The utterances that I create were made because of the history that I have.
And Walker, the artist who created the exhibit shown here in St. Louis, obviously doesn't have that history. Even though he's worked again and again with important images from black culture, he defines the work by its focus on consumerism, technology, and history. He says putting toothpaste smears on a massive picture of the rapper Trina is a statement on the whitewashing and commercialization of the black body.
I'm not talking about history you learned in school. My work kind of deals everything with like the rise of modernism and starting kind of close to, back to the Industrial Revolution to the rise of modernism and through sort of the beginning of the digital age or whatever you want to call sort of the space we're in now.
And while Walker says race isn't top of mind when he's making these artistic statements, Kehinde Wiley says that's a luxury he and other black artists don't have.
The fact that if I painted a bowl of fruit, it would be a bowl of fruit by a black male American gives you a certain text through which you can read that bowl of fruit. It gives you a means by which you can make certain judgments and assumptions and certain affinity associations with that body of work. And the same can be said of Kelly Walker or anyone of his ilk. The fact is we're all bound. We're bound by traditions and political assumptions. And those narratives are something that artists have dealt with for centuries. Sometimes we play against them and play with them. Some of the assumptions that people make about the conclusions that you would have drawn or should have drawn given your demographic is something that people play with. Artists have always been tricksters, and they have been fooling the audience for hundreds of years. The question is, what is the intention? And that bifurcation between intention and interpretation, I think, is where the rubber hits the road with art. The extrapolation that the audience has is, of course, their own, and they're perfectly justified in drawing their own conclusions. But I think as artists, we should also be very cognizant and responsible in the way that we talk about our art. And we have to say this is what we stand for, and oftentimes those things are ineffable. Sometimes we create types of work that are a bit more poetic and personal. And those things aren't easily announced or easily arrived at. And that's the tension, but that's also why we love it as a society. We love the ability for an artist to come in and throw in chaos and shake up our assumptions. But in socially tense times, such as the present, you'll see that these types of signifiers that art throws out take on that much more importance.
After listening to this story and all its different perspectives about race influencing art and the art world's sometimes tense relationship with marginalized communities, We wanted to go back to Jason and Shanti one more time.
Because even though they have strong opinions and divergent opinions about what happened at CAM here in St. Louis, they're on the same page about one thing.
No, I think the controversy would be good for St. Louis. I think any type of contentious situation where people have to talk about stuff and they're not in agreement, they have to find a way to communicate, find some common ground. I think it's always great.
And here is where we agree. I also think that the controversy surrounding this in the long term will have some positive aspects to it. I think it has put, for a lay audience, people who are not artists, people who go to museums, I think it will put on their radar the idea of subject matter and authorship, the idea of representations of marginalized bodies, and how that itself is a political commentary in ways that maybe they hadn't thought of before. I think the Contemporary Art Museum is going to emerge as a leader in this when they begin to take bolder stands and when they begin to reach out to the community. I think the Black art community, we all now know that they have a very visible presence and extremely powerful messages, and that art can help our community move forward. I think we have a long way to go to change any large institution in the United States and in St. Louis to make them more inclusive, to make sure each player in the community gets equal representation and they're valued the same. So in the long run, I think I'm very impressed with the Black arts community and how they're rallying around and educating all of us. And I think they're putting us all to the challenge to think more critically about this.
The curator, Jeffrey Uslip, who brought in Kelly Walker's exhibit, is no longer with the museum. And in January, a new exhibit will go up.
It will feature the work of Deanna Lawson, a young Black photographer from Brooklyn. Her images deal directly with how the Black body has been traditionally depicted in photography. All right, guys, we got to give a big shout out to Willis Ryder Arnold for bringing us that story. And also Jenny Simone. She's another colleague here at St. Louis Public Radio, and she let us use some of her tape. We also want to give a huge thanks to local producers Trifecta and Abnormal, who created a lot of the music you hear on the show.
We Live Here is produced by me, Tim Lloyd.
And me, Camille Stanley.
Shula Newman is our executive editor.
And Cassie Morgan composed our theme music.
And from St. Louis Public Radio, this is We Live Here.
Support for this podcast comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.